commercial break.
The entire break watching this video that was sent to me by a friend of the show, Representative Jim Nash, with what the mumble strip sound like. It was. I'll see if I can find the link because it was texted to me. I'll see if I can tweet it out.
Yeah, it's
that was amazing. That was amazing.
Plug your phone in. We'll play.
Thank you, Representative Nash. That was hilarious.
And Sam, it is Justice and Drew, Twin Cities News Talk. You did during the break. You pointed something out. We were talking about these mumble strips,
Mark Dayton strips.
These Dayton strips, similar to traditional rumble strips, most motors are familiar with, except they are ground into the pavement and in a weave pattern that lessens the external noise produced by vehicles passing over them. But it just the whole thing comes off as weird. Where are they putting them, and how is it working? And I made the comment that maybe they were in the crosswalk, but you keenly pointed out that
if a Mark Dayton strip is in a crosswalk meant to slow you down, if you're already in the crosswalk,
you're a little late.
Like the whole road leading up to it would be
4 miles ahead of the crosswalk.
Right. Yeah.
You're really supposed to be grabbing the steering wheel and moving it back, moving your car back into the lane because you're out of the lane now.
All of this just sounds like weird, lame excuses about for them to be able to have this big mumble strip project that makes no sense and doesn't seem necessary at all.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
It doesn't. I mean, we already have rumble strips.
Yeah, well, this is instead of rumble strips, they're doing new strips that are more quiet externally. I mean, that's the point of it. It's I think you had residents who have complained about rumble strips on some of these highways in the rural areas, and it does say that they're going to be focused on rural areas across the state. So I think you've had residents that were tired of hearing these trucks and other things going along these highways, and the noise from the rumble strips was getting into their house.
I welcome the sound. I'm like, yeah, you get back on the road.
MnDOT doesn't have. I get it, and I'm kind of in between. If there's a value in it, and you know, people in rural areas, okay, fine. But that being said, this is not coming without a price. And you mean to tell me that the money that MnDOT's spending on Dayton strips couldn't be better spent somewhere else? Just not a. I'd have to see the numbers.
Are they gonna?
That's all.
Are they more expensive than rumble strips? Are they less expensive? It doesn't say.
Are they replacing rumble strips?
It does say it's a low cost strategy, so I got no problem with it.
All right,
I'll trust MnDOT's judgment.
I have no trust. Number 5. The Boy Scouts program is changing its name now that it's admitting girls. From the Associated Press, for 108 years, the Boy Scouts of America's flagship program has been known simply as the Boy Scouts. With girls soon entering the ranks, the group says that iconic name is going to change. The organization yesterday announced a new name for its Boy Scouts program, Scouts BSA, which doesn't really have as much of a ring to it. The change is going to take effect next February. Chief Scout Executive Mike Serbaugh said that many possibilities were considered during the lengthy and incredibly fun deliberations before the new name was chosen.
What a weird addition. <I know>. what an odd sort of description to add into that. I mean,
lengthy and incredibly fun.
Yeah, lengthy deliberations before a new name was chosen. This is fine. When you say, and they were a lot of fun.
It seems like such a scout thing to say.
We all got merit badges for it. It was fantastic.
I appreciate his positivity in the world that we live in right now. He said, we wanted to land on something that evokes the past, but also conveys the inclusive nature of the program going forward. We're trying to find the right way to say we're here for both young men and young women. The parent organization will remain the Boy Scouts of America, and the Cub Scouts, its program for 7 to 10-year-olds, will keep its title as well. But the Boy Scouts, the program for 11 to 17-year-olds, will now be Scouts BSA. The organization has already started admitting girls into the Cub Scouts, and Scouts BSA begins accepting girls next year. Serbaugh predicted that both boys and girls in Scouts BSA will refer to themselves simply as Scouts rather than adding boy or girl as a modifier.
Yeah, a friend of the show, Eric in Chicago, has called in on this before. The story alludes to it. They've actually been doing this for a while now and having the girls come over to the Boy Scouts. So this change in the name and the rebranding has kind of been there, and they've been moving that direction for a bit. I think a part of this is, and I don't think it's relayed in the story at all. I think a part of this is just keeping the Boy Scouts viable and alive. Yeah, you know, it's a rebrand.
I do think that has something to do with it. I think they were looking long term, and if we want to remain I remember seeing a story about membership dropping and harder to recruit, harder to get, you know, to get boys to take part. And I think they kind of saw that writing on the wall and said, if we want to remain a viable organization, we've got to open it up to girls as well.
Yeah. Well, and then in comparison, you look at the Girl Scouts, who are feeling a little upset about this whole development because the name change is coming amid strained relations between the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts of America. Girl Scout leaders say that they were blindsided by the move and are gearing up with an aggressive campaign to recruit and retain girls as members. Among the initiatives, it's just messy.
I don't think it, like, bad things are going to come of this, but I do feel like, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, we just sort of lost in our culture. You know, now there are no Boy Scouts anymore. Boy Scouts have always been a very, very valuable organization, and I think they will continue to be valuable for the people that participate in it. But there is something to be said to having a place for boys to go and be with other boys and be led by men and learn about what it is to be a man and things like that. And you're going to lose an element of that. I'm curious, you know, what the reaction publicly would be if the Girl Scouts started letting in boys and changed their name. I imagine there would be a lot more furor over it.
So, and actually with the Boy Scouts program admitting girls, the story does point out that they're going to continue to divide them, like, among gender lines for the most part. So this is going to be single sex units pursuing the same types of activities. So boys will be with boys, girls would be with girls, earning the same array of merit badges and potentially having the same pathway to the coveted Eagle Scout Award. This guy in this story is quoted saying, Serba, he said that having separate units of boys and girls should alleviate concerns that girls joining the BSA for the first time might be at a disadvantage in seeking leadership opportunities. So far, more than 3,000 girls have joined roughly 170 Cub Scout packs, participating in the first phase of the new policy, and the pace will intensify with this summer under a nationwide multimedia recruitment campaign titled Scout Me In.
I didn't realize that the Boy Scouts of America and the Girl Scouts of America were that separate of entities. I thought that they were more under sort of a scout umbrella, like, consisting of the two, but it sounds like there's a bit of competition going on here.
I feel like they kind of should be, and maybe with the way that the Boy Scouts are going, if the Girl Scouts eventually kind of, like, lose whatever popularity or something, maybe the Boy Scouts Association will end up being that big parent.
And it sounds like the Girl Scouts of America are probably frustrated because this consolidation of what now the Scouts BCA is doing has the potential to take away from some of their ranks, and that's probably part of the reason why they changed. Drew, you touched upon it, and I assume there's probably a lot of variables involved. When this story first came out a couple of years ago, they were talking about doing this, there was a lot of arguments against sort of political correctness, and people saying, oh, this is just political correctness run amok, you gotta let girls into the Boy Scouts. And like I said earlier, a friend of the show, Eric in Chicago, had pointed out that no, they've actually had girls in the Boy Scouts for a while. We had Logan, our 15-year-old, in the Boy Scouts for a little while. We did not do that with Kyle. I think the society part of it is probably the bigger reason why. I think that this is something that normally was handed down from household, from dads to sons. And when you look at the activities of the Boy Scouts in the current modern world we live in, when you get together for these troop meetings and all that, it's almost archaic. And I know it's designed that way, but based
that's not
off
a bad thing.
Off of what kids are entertained by, you go to these troop meetings and the things that they're doing, I can imagine a lot of these kids just losing interest quickly because they're like, why are we doing arts and crafts? I don't, you know, this kind of thing.
Right. What am I doing with my hands?
Right. Right.
I need to do things with my hands?
This
is weird.
Yeah.
No, there are value, but there's a lot of value in the things that they
learn. Sure.
There's a lot of value in the things that they do. And I think part of what needs to happen is demonstrating that value going forward. The Boy Scouts have to do a better job of sort of marketing why it's important and valuable that you learn these things and you engage in these activities and what, you know, what sort of skills and perspective you can gain from it.
Well, and I think you also, of the variables you need to add into this is, you have to go back, and again, this isn't Obama's bad, but look at the past 8 years when it comes to the economy and families that had to work harder to make ends meet. When you have a child in the Boy Scouts, that doesn't just require a level of commitment for the child. It requires a major level of commitment for the parent on top of all the other things, sports, school activities. You add the Boy Scouts into the mix, and that requires you to take them to the troop meetings, yes, in the middle of the week. It requires you to go to the events with them. And I imagine that the past 8 years was probably difficult for a lot of families to find time in their busy schedules to go and do those types of things.
Yeah. And it's also creates an opportunity for a competing organization to pop up.
Right.
You know, if you do want to have an organization that is exclusive for boys, now's a good opportunity to start it up.
Yeah, the Justice and Drew Summer Camp. Hold on, let me back up here. You'd have to go to that. I know. The Drew Summer Camp.
You'd have to leave your house to actually go and participate in that.
Get a merit badge in home brewing.
I don't know. I've never homebrewed. Get a merit badge in buying me beer.
Maybe you'd be motivated in home brewing if you knew that you had a badge at the end of the journey.
Right. Or a beer.
Or beer.
Yeah. I'll take a beer over a badge any day.
What kind of badges could you hand out? Like, you know, proper mocking of environmentalists, a new one for that. Sorry, your sarcasm badge.
Your snarky tweet badge.
Yeah, that's good. Ooh, tweet game. That's a good one. Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't do that.
Excellent top five, Sam. Well done.
Thanks.
651-989-5855. Let's go here. This comes out of Out of the Hill, a former Democratic presidential nominee. I don't know if you know this, she lost. Hillary Clinton.
The super gonorrhea of American politics.
She's added another excuse to her long list of excuses of why she lost in a Wednesday interview with Time Inc. Hillary Clinton had this to say.
You may be the only presidential candidate since World War II that actually had to stand up and say, I am a capitalist. And you did. Did it hurt you?
Probably. I mean, you know, it's hard. It's hard to know. But I mean, if you're in the Iowa caucuses and 41% of Democrats are socialists or self-described socialists, and I'm asked, are you a capitalist? And I say yes, but with appropriate regulation and appropriate accountability, you know, that probably gets lost in the, oh, my gosh, she's a capitalist. I mean,
or how about, oh, my gosh, you're a terrible candidate.
Oh, my gosh, you should have gone to more states.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, you shouldn't have been an awful person.
Oh, my gosh, you shouldn't have taken it for granted that you thought you were going to win.
I do like the admission, though, you know, the sort of tacit admission there from Hillary that the Democratic base is made up largely of people that do not like capitalism, do not think capitalism is a good thing, and think that labeling yourself a capitalist means you're a bad person.
Meanwhile, a lot of Democrats are probably like, stop talking.
Right.
She's not going to. She's making so much money right now, and it's to the left's detriment. I think that they would love her to knock it off as much as although she does provide a good level of entertainment.
She said 41% of Democrats in the Iowa caucuses are socialists or self-described socialists. That is much bigger number than I would have guessed. 41%? That's terrifying.
But what percentage of them even know what that means?
Doesn't matter, man.
I know. But their definition of, they probably look at their party as being that. They probably don't have a full, I imagine that a significant portion of that, maybe I shouldn't be giving them so much credit, but doesn't truly understand what that terminology means. You know, I mean, look, that was the line of thinking when it came to all of Bernie Sanders' popularity. You know, you had all these young millennials out there identifying with socialism, but a majority of them were just so ignorant to what that actually meant.
Yeah.
It was just kitschy and cool.
Yeah, just in their mind, it means I don't have to work hard and I'll just get all the stuff I need. And then I can just do all the stuff I want to do and not have to worry about, you know, making money to pay bills.
Yeah, and if I need to go to, you know, a job, then I can make sure I go to a job where I can wear my Che Guevara shirt and not gonna be given a hard time.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think the root of most of this sort of democratic strain of capitalism is just rooted in laziness. Yeah. It's just rooted in laziness more than anything else. The lack of desire to actually go out and have to work hard and learn skills and get better at jobs and demonstrate your value to employers so that you can advance and make more money. That's all. Why do I have to do all that stuff?
Right.
You know, why can't they just give me the stuff I need? That way I can do the stuff I want.
And then a lot of them have that mentality because they've been spoon-fed this thought that they're victims.
Yeah.
That society has been working against them. That they're, you know, it's the greedy capitalists that are taking away these opportunities at your success. And so we're the government, we'll go ahead and support your mediocre lifestyle.
And it's true though. I mean, there is a nefarious little strain of thought that has been implanted in a lot of the millennials, a lot of the younger generation, that they can't make it. They can't be successful.
Right.
The system is rigged. You know, unless you're one of the chosen elite, you'll never be able to get to that point. There is that line of thinking out there that there is no path, you know, towards success unless you're part of the elite or you're somehow born into it.
Well, the whole fight for 15 argument is based off of that.
Yeah.
Look at locally. We've got Amazon ready to hire 200 individuals for well-paying jobs that are probably going to, you know, if you do the job right, you could probably have for a really long-term jobs. And instead, you have these activists who are out there saying that they're fighting for individuals that haven't achieved that level of success where they could have a job like that. And instead of pointing them in a direction of job training on how to better themselves to get a great career, they sit back and say, well, you guys are victims. These greedy corporations that you've decided to work for, they have plenty of money to pay you more, and they just choose not to. So we'll go and force them to.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. I'm looking forward to being joined by Kim Crockett from the Center of the American Experiment at the bottom of the hour, and Tim Pawlenty joining us just around 8 o'clock.
Hey, real quick, out of Reuters, in his first major public speech since resigning the U.S. Senate, Al Franken returned to the spotlight to deliver a blistering rebuke of tech companies.
Speaking of super gonorrhea.
Specifically Facebook over abuse of users' privacy data. Do we care? I'm sorry. Do we really care? I'm just so curious.
I don't think I do.
Do we care what Franken has to say about Facebook not caring about privacy and security of users? I can't. Yeah. Somebody talking. Franken talking about privacy. I don't get. Sorry.
Yeah.
You've lost that card.
I don't think he really cares about the privacy of people who are taking pictures with him.
He focused on mostly user privacy, but also touched on the current political climate. Were they sleeping? Okay. All right, I think we covered that. I think we handled that just fine.
Was there a meet and greet afterwards?
Well, there was a greet. There was no meet beforehand. 651.
You guys want to get your pictures taken without freaking... No!
No, please, no!
Oh,
my God. No,
oh,
no.
No.
I will as long as I can be seated.
I want to see like a group shot where it's like Al Franken in the middle and then like 2 feet of space between him and everybody else.
Everybody's just like, just kind of, you know.
The hover arm.
Just kind of a distance, kind of, hey, woo-hoo. Keep yourself away. All right, coming up, Kim Crockett, Center of the American Experiment. She will be joining us in studio just after 7:30 this morning. We'll talk about the latest of Jason Lewis and Met Council reform, I guess, for lack of a better word. Next, we'll run through, and we'll spend some time on these with Nick Zerwas in tomorrow's show, but a number of different proposals that are advancing in the final weeks of the legislative session. Got a pair of Republicans making some new gun proposals. Hand-free bill remains alive. We'll get you up to speed next on Twin Cities News Talk.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword LOCK to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply. That's LOCK to 200-200.
Hey guys, Mother's Day is coming up May 13th, and you want to get this one right for all the moms in your life. It's okay when the government does it.
Right. By the way, speaking of snooping, and we'll get to some of the stuff happening in the legislature, but to CNBC, Cambridge Analytica, shutting down, says the siege of media coverage drove away clients.
Well, yeah.
I feel...
It's not surprising at all.
I feel a little bit bad A little bit. Okay. Good. Well, and I only feel a little bit bad for Cambridge Analytica because I can't help but think that if it hadn't been for the false narrative that there was leaking going on, that the blowback against them wouldn't have been nearly enough.
Yeah. Yeah. No, all the blowback should be directed towards Facebook. Honestly. I mean, because Facebook allowed Cambridge Analytica to do what it does. Facebook turned a blind eye to these third-party apps that violated their privacy terms. Those privacy terms, that privacy terms agreement that they would enter into with the third-party apps were nothing more than a CYA for Facebook that they never, that I don't think they really ever had any intention of enforcing.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just Cambridge Analytica. It was a lot of these third-party apps, and they're still doing it to this day. It's just that Cambridge Analytica happened to be the one that, you know, the Donald Trump campaign used in order to, you know, help gather data and, he helped him win the election and with stolen data. No. None of it was stolen. It was given, and Facebook said, well, you're not supposed to do this with the data. You're not supposed to do these things with the data that you're gathering, but we're not really going to follow up and make sure you're not.
The firm said in the statement, over the past several months, Cambridge Analytica has been the subject of numerous unfounded accusations, and despite the company's efforts to correct the record, has been vilified for activities that are not only legal, but also widely accepted a standard component of online advertising in both the political and commercial arenas. Look, the reality of Cambridge Analytica shutting down is that Cambridge Analytica really isn't shutting down. These guys are smart enough and have the knowledge enough to know that all I got to do is break up the name Cambridge Analytica, say we're shutting down, they will pop back up as another entity and nobody will be paying any attention to it or give it any attention whatsoever.
I agree.
You know, I imagine for them, they go, all right, let's just, we'll be Cornell analysts, you know, moving forward, or new Brighton analysts or something, you know, moving forward. All right. A couple of items I wanted to share with you. We'll get into a little bit more of this tomorrow when Nick Zerwas is in studio for the Friday Roundtable. Star Tribune. Protesters who block freeways and people who intentionally help those who damage pipelines or other utilities could face new legal penalties starting this summer. So one of these, we'll start off with the pipeline one and then move over to the protest bill. This measure, Representative Dennis Smith out of Maple Grove, passed a Tuesday night. It comes as people are organizing against oil pipelines like the proposed Enbridge Line 3 replacement in northern Minnesota. His proposal says a person or entity that intentionally aids, advises, hires counsel, or conspires with someone who damaged or trespassed with the goal of damaging a pipeline facility or utility may be held criminally liable. And look, that's relevant, especially when you consider some of those protesters were given the ability to argue that their concerns over climate change were proper justification for their doing damage to property as it relates to the Enbridge 3 pipeline construction.
Yeah, that's pretty laughable.
Yeah.
That's pretty laughable.
We had to, but it was going to destroy the planet.
Maybe.
So we believe.
Can we get an injunction against that volcano that's doing a lot more damage to the environment than anything humans have ever done?
I went back and looked at those numbers again yesterday just for fun because it makes me laugh when I can, you know, speak out against activists, socialists, environmentalists.
Right.
But the amount of undoing of the efforts to combat global warming via limiting CO2, you know, carbon emissions, the amounts of just kind of from a volcano, like it undoes like instantly, like years worth and billions of dollars just from a, you know, sorry.
Is that your volcano impression?
Had a little indigestion. Well, I didn't want to do like a legitimate burp. I didn't want to be gross, you know.
You know, volcanoes don't burp, right?
Well, I know, but you know,
they erupt.
It's a technical term. You don't know that? If it's not a full eruption, it's more of a burp. Burp. Kind of thing. Back to Nick Zerwas's proposal. let's see. So on the protest bill, of course, opponents called both of these, but obviously on the protest one, an attack on the First Amendment. Supporters said they will protect property and public safety. Nick said it's a way for the legislature to say this type of behavior is not okay.
Exactly.
Of his proposal to increase the penalty for people who interfere with the freeway traffic or block airport roads.
It's not making existing legal behavior illegal.
Right.
It's not criminalizing behavior that is currently legal. That's a really important thing to clarify when you look at the reaction to this bill, when you look at the people that are protesting against this bill. Nothing that is currently legal is being made illegal. It's simply changing the penalties.
Right.
That's it. Legislature does this sort of thing all the time. When they've determined that a certain type of penalty isn't proving to be enough of a deterrent, or perhaps something isn't being enforced the way it should, the legislature has every right to step in and say, we're going to increase the penalties to try to create more of a deterrent, or we're going to take away some of the law enforcement's discretion on when and whether to enforce this law.
The ACLU of Minnesota's legislative director, Ben Feast, said this. Okay. And I actually agree. He said this. What we're doing is obviously chilling speech. That is the intent of the bill. I agree with Ben. This is the reason why. Okay. Chilling speech is not silencing speech. And you should be thinking about when you exercise your free speech, mm-hmm. what the intent and what's going to happen and the consequences of when you go and exercise your free speech.
And that's the part that bothers me, is that these protesters, they want to claim that breaking the law is covered by the First Amendment. They want to claim that breaking the law, you know, going and violating people's property rights or blocking highways is covered by the First Amendment when it is in the form of protest. And what they're missing is when you are going to break the law as a form of protest to try to draw attention to the issue, part of that contract, part of that deal is a willingness.
Right.
To accept the consequences of breaking that law. You feel so strongly about this issue, and it is so important to you that other people be made aware of this issue and you draw attention to it, that you're willing to break the law and suffer the consequences. These people are, this would be the equivalent of like going on a hunger strike, but having McDonald's every 30 minutes.
Right.
I mean, I'm on a hunger strike, but I got hungry. So, you know, I just ate, but I'm still on a hunger strike. I still want all the attention of being on the hunger strike, but I need some fries.
Yeah, and look, Ben's right. The intent of the bill, at least in my opinion, is to chill. Chill out. Chill. Hold on. Before you go and do what it is you're about to do, why don't you chill and decide whether or not you're willing to go and accept the consequences of your actions?
And they're clearly not. They've demonstrated time and time again that they want to be able to break the law in under the guise of a protest and have it be completely consequence-free. That's not how it works. If you're going to do civil disobedience, which is a legitimate tactic in the form of protest, there's nothing wrong with engaging in civil disobedience as a method, as a means to draw attention to whatever issue you want to draw attention to. But if you're going to do it with a willingness to accept the consequences.
The next comment from Ben Feast, the ACLU of Minnesota's legislative director, he jumps the shark, in my opinion, and becomes an arrogant jerk. Feast said that protests amount to an inconvenience for drivers. Who in the heck are you?
Mm-hmm.
Who in the heck are you to say, oh, it's just an inconvenience to people just going about their daily business. Oh, it's just an inconvenience for somebody, you know, oh, I don't know, taking their kid to daycare or on their way to work.
Right, right.
You know, or headed out, headed out to a meal. It's just an inconvenience.
How do you know that one of these protests didn't make somebody late for work and perhaps cost them a job, or late to an appointment and perhaps cost them a sale? You know, if they're out there, you know, on sales calls, how do you know that this didn't severely and negatively impact somebody? Because you're never going to hear about it if it did.
Right.
You know, I mean, you may hear the story, and we did hear the story of, you know, a pregnant woman that was on the way to give birth and got blocked by a protest. Didn't happen here. Happened in another city. But those stories are out there. But it's the minor stuff. That is more than just a little inconvenience. You might have cost somebody their job. You might have cost somebody significant amounts of income. That is more than just, oh, it's just a little inconvenience.
Dayton seeks emergency cash in relief for schools. Representative Jason Lewis promotes U.S. senators oppose Met Council change. Kim Crockett, Center of the American Experiment, will join us to talk about both those issues next in studio.
Justice and Drew.
Normally, I am not a fan of popular music, but this song teaches and entertains.
You don't like music?
No, I enjoy the dulcet tones of AM talk radio.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Hey, it's Drew here for my friends over at the Good Feet store. Look, I was really struggling with some foot pain for well over...
Oh, okay. I was like, I didn't know where you were going.
I was going to threaten him.
I'm offering
to help. Actually, I'm kind of busy. Well, I'll send Sam over to your house.
You don't want me at your house. If you haven't already downloaded the iHeartRadio app...
And subscribe to the Justice and Drew channel.
And subscribe to our channel. What are you doing?
Sam's going to pay you a visit. Send me your address.
That's a bad idea. It is Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM.
DM me your address.
Center of the American Experiment, Kim Crockett. It's been far too long. Thanks for coming to the studio this morning.
I haven't seen you guys in a while.
Good morning.
Good to be here. Good morning.
Thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Did you wait till all the snow was gone? Is that
I've just been holed up.
Shuffling
my way out.
Yeah, nobody blames
you. That
was
a great snowstorm. I loved it.
Yeah. Finally, yesterday on my ride, no snow. It was finally all gone because there was still like little patches underneath the trees, and it was finally all gone yesterday.
It's all good. I kept telling people that weekend they were freaking out. I'm like, just wait. It'll change.
Yeah. You guys, Center of the American Experiment, the website is americanexperiment.org. You can follow them on Twitter at MNThinkTank. Don't miss Courageous Candace Owens coming May 8th to Minneapolis. I love her.
Are you going to be there?
I hope so.
Well, I'll sit with you.
Okay. All right. Yeah. May 8th.
Perry, take a note.
The timing is everything. Drew's Center's comment. Hosting a lunch forum with Candace Owens. It's a lunch forum. That's great for my schedule. On May 8th, I'm scrolling down. Where is this?
I think it's at the Marriott.
Marriott. Yeah. Minneapolis Marriott City Center in downtown. There you go.
Yep. And I'm just hoping Kanye West shows up.
That'd be
great.
You
know, we're holding out hope.
She's amazing. She's such a valuable voice right now, and we're having her on the show on Monday.
Yeah,
as a heads up, just a little programming note. She'll be on Monday morning to help promote this event.
And if you missed the conversation that we had with friend of the show James T. Harris, we talked at length about Kanye, and he had some really interesting perspectives on all that. The 8 o'clock hour of yesterday's show on the iHeartRadio app, you can go back and listen to the podcast. Make sure you go and check that out. All right, we got a number of things to talk about with you, Kim Crockett. We'll start off here. We got into a bit of this yesterday out of Care 11, but Governor Mark Dayton is seeking emergency cash relief for schools because, you know, if you just throw money at the problem, it'll fix everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. So a bunch of school districts are short on funds at the end of the year. This is just something that came up just fast.
Right.
Like all of a sudden there was this emergency. And I thought maybe there had been like a catastrophe when I first heard the news on it. So he's looking for $183 million, which is not chump change. You know, I mean, I know numbers don't mean a lot to people, but that's a lot of money. And apparently schools have run short because of teacher contracts that they agreed to, you know, which they didn't have to do, especially if they're running deficits, right?
Right.
Or they'd have to find a way to cut other places. If those were good contracts that they signed, then they have to maybe let some of the growing administrative class, for example, in their schools go or find some other savings, just like anybody else has to do. And some of the schools were experiencing lower enrollment. And there was a third factor that I'd heard about out there that I just can't pull up in my head this morning.
Yeah, there was a suggestion, and you may have brought it up, when some more money would be available for the K-12 programs if Dayton had prioritized expanding the universal pre-K programs as well. You know, but they were pushing the usual buttons of, you know, teachers are going to lose jobs, some schools may be closed down. There was a part of me yesterday, and I hate to be cruel about it, was like, well, look, you know, if they can't make ends meet and they don't have the enrollment numbers, then maybe these are the types of things that need to happen.
Well, the thing is that they can.
What a concept.
It's always an emergency, right? And there's actually, this isn't the first time a number of schools have been in this position. And there are ways, Representative Jennifer Loon and Senator Carla Nelson, whom I'll discuss in the context of pre-K shortly, have offered, you know, there are ways to handle this. We don't let this, you know, we don't let schools fall apart.
Right.
Maybe we should. I don't know. I don't know enough about their finances. But, you know, you don't reward superintendents who don't manage their books by saying, oh, yeah, whatever, we'll write a check.
Yeah.
You know, just write a check.
Yeah. What's the incentive to make your budget? Yeah. I understand sort of the sort of negative reaction to what John has suggested is that these are schools, you know, nobody wants schools to fail.
Nobody wants schools to fail.
Nobody wants, you know, kids to not be able to get a quality education. But at the same time, you know, if you're just going to show up with a briefcase full of cash every time they say, oh, sorry, budget shortfall, they're never going to change.
Right. And I'm sure that each district has a different story to tell. And we'd have to go and, you know, dig into it. But this isn't the way you run, you know, education.
No, it's not the way you run anything.
The state of Minnesota decided years ago that the state was the main player and the main funder as opposed to local funding.
Yeah. This is such a hallmark of the Dayton administration, though. When it comes to education, when it comes to Minshore, Minlars, all of these things, you know, once a year, twice a year, Dayton shows up at that podium and says, we've got an emergency.
We've got an emergency.
We need $93 million. We need $138 million. Just give it to me.
Well, and we must be really rich because I don't sense. I look around, you know, I'm driving around town, I talk to people, whatever. We just must be so rich that people aren't feeling this. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't sense a discontent with him.
No.
Even though he mumbles and he's odd and everything's an emergency. I got to hear that mumble strip. I texted him. Send it to me. He hasn't done that yet. He must be busy this morning. So let's talk about pre-K.
Yeah.
Because here's what I want your listeners to understand. The Dayton administration has been pushing really hard for 8 years to get every 4-year-old and some 3-year-olds into our public schools, and they have had some success.
Okay.
So we're spending about $46 million a year for kind of permanent spending in the pre-K space. And remember, this started with all-day kindergarten just a couple of years ago. Now almost every Minnesota kid goes to all-day kindergarten. There's another $69 million that's in private scholarships. That sounds great, right, for at-risk kids, but a lot of it's being directed to public schools. And then yet last year, you know, he held his breath until he turned blue in the middle of the night, and they gave him another $56 million in one-time funding for pilot programs.
You wonder why there's so little accountability.
Well, so we're up over $100 million, right, a year.
Yeah.
And we've got something like 150 schools with either a permanent program or pilot. And there's about 500 districts plus when you include regular school districts and charters around the state.
Okay.
So we're not there. They've held them off at about, you know, what, 15, 20%. And remember, pre-K was supposed to be for at-risk kids who really do benefit because their parents are either ding-dongs or they're trying to turn their lives around, you know, by going to work or school.
Sure.
They might be high schoolers with a baby.
Right.
Right. And the idea was let's help them out and get those kids into a quality situation every day while mom gets her life together. I did a little back of the envelope. I took our $9 billion that we spend a year on education, which is 41% of our state dollars that we collect from hardworking Minnesotans. We're spending over 40% just on K-12, you guys.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
That's a lot.
If you divide, if you take out the 100 plus million that we're already spending on pre-K and divide that number by 13, which is 13 grades,
okay,
you get about $684 million a year to do what the Dayton administration wants to do. And they are actually going around the state and selling it as free child care to parents.
That's not how
I'm not making this up. Brenda Caselius is the education commissioner. She's got op-eds out all over the state right now. And she is saying out loud that this is a great deal because it costs $10,000 per kid a year to put them in daycare, quality daycare, child care. And we'll take care of it for you. Just drop them off at school.
Is it just about the
enrollment? She's actually using the word free.
Is it just about the enrollment numbers for them? They want the they want the bodies in the schools. Is that what it comes down to?
Who is spending time with the children? Teachers,
right?
And they want them licensed. Mm-hmm. And what do licensed teachers do? They get put into a collective bargaining unit with Education Minnesota. They give Education Minnesota about $1,000 a year to go out and spend on left-wing policy.
Oh, such a racket.
I mean, I hate to. Do I sound like I'm wearing tinfoil?
No, no.
Instead of these earphones. Yeah. I really, truly, I know it sounds crazy, but your listeners will understand that this is what animates our governor and his administration. Hillary Clinton was right. I think 40% plus. And by the way, she is not a capitalist.
No.
She's not.
Maybe by Bernie Sanders comparison standards, but not by much.
Right. I don't know if everybody heard that comment she made, but this is what animates him. And I think he's convinced himself and all the people around him, like Tina Smith and Brenda Casselius, I think they've convinced themselves that they are morally superior and that the right place for small children. I mean, we're talking 3 and 4 year olds, you guys. Some of those kids are still pooping in their pants, right? I won't mention names, but I know little kids who were still doing that when they were 3 and 4. No, mommy, I don't like that toilet. It's going to, you know, we're talking 3 and 4 year olds who can barely sit on the potty at these schools.
Right.
Or are they going to take the bus? I mean, what the hell?
Yeah.
So.
And it is. It's so cynical.
Excuse my language and my potty references.
It's all right.
Upset when the state is reaching out to grab our 3 and 4 year olds.
Well, it's so cynical, because it is. It's not about what's best for them. It's not about what's best for those kids. It's not about what's best for their parents. They may say that. They may try to sell it. But this is about getting more money funneled to Education Minnesota.
Well,
at the end of the day, that's what this is all about.
And getting their hands on our kids so they can indoctrinate them with their stuff. And then we wonder why, you know, millennials and younger are saying that somehow the free market system is not working for them, and they're happy to go with the whole socialist thing, which you guys were talking about earlier.
We need to make sure that with the time that we have, let's switch topics here a bit. We need to make sure we get to Jason Lewis. And so out of the Star Tribune this morning, Jason Lewis promotes U.S. Senators oppose Met Council change. Bill would strip current council of its transportation planning authority. And
oh,
so
that's just hysteria.
Oh, the arguments against this, and there's an article that we don't have time to get into right now from the Pioneer Press where they lay out the reasons why the Met Council is a frequent punching bag, and it's absolutely ludicrous. But your thoughts on what Jason Lewis is doing and taking aim at the Met Council?
So there are metropolitan areas, folks, all over the country that comply with federal law in order to receive federal transportation dollars and distribute them. Federal law says, you know, given what you guys do and how important it is, we don't really want to give you federal dollars, tax dollars for transportation unless you have a good governance board. And that includes locally elected officials, not directly elected necessarily.
Right.
The only ones that do it that way are Portland, by the way. It's a bad idea. But there are literally hundreds of these planning organizations like the Met Council, including about a dozen here in Minnesota, by the way. I kid you not. There are other MPOs that comply with the federal requirement that you have locally elected officials sitting on these governing boards, because they have the boots on the ground knowledge of what's best for those communities. And here's the really important part. They're much more accountable than a board that is accountable to one, which is what we have. We are the only organization like this in the country. That's not a good thing. Mm-hmm. So what Congressman Lewis is doing, and he said yesterday, I can't figure out why somebody didn't do this before. All he's doing is amending the language that takes away our grandfathering clause. We've had it for 20 plus years. You know, go be unique. You know, which feeds right into Minnesota's smug sense of superiority that we suffer from, right? So that's all he's trying to do. And there, of course, the federal government and Congress would work with the Met Council and the state while got into compliance with that federal requirement. There's hysteria around it. But that's all he's trying to do. And it ties into some state-level legislation that would bring the Met Council into compliance.
It needs to happen.
You know what? There were Democrats standing up there with the congressman yesterday.
Yeah.
In support of this, because they see the problem.
Well, and all you got to do is look at the tone of the opposition and how quickly they resort to misrepresenting what their efforts are and lying, flat out lying.
Right. Jason Lewis is trying to prevent federal dollars from coming to the state. No,
Jason Lewis is trying to destroy the Met Council. Jason Lewis is trying to destroy the regional plan.
I kind of wish he was.
No, we need, the center's position on this is that the Met Council should be unwound. So that you know, constituent parts are it's kind of like a breakup into baby bells,
right?
And that is our official position, but we don't disagree that elected officials are the ones who should be making these decisions about where federal transportation dollars go. It's that simple.
Kim Crockett, Senator of the American Experiment. Thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to having you back again soon.
Yeah, I'm going to bug you about that next week, probably.
All right. I look forward to it. Tim Pawlenty joins us next.
Justice and Drew.
You basically have been impacted by at least two Home Alone booby traps.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look at the roads being brought to you by VisitMyrtleBeach.com. Got a crash on 169 southbound Plymouth Avenue, taking up both lanes of traffic.